Okay, 4:10, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, last time we were discussing it, thank you. The concept of Kabbid Savicha Vesimecha, honoring your father and mother. And we went into the whole thing of that whole thing, but the last few words we didn't finish up yet. It says, L'man Yerichon Yomecha, that you should live long. That's Parak Chav Pasik Yud Beis. The end of Pasik Yud Beis. Now, in the second Aseret Dibros in Parshas Veschanan, the Torah adds not only you should live long. The Torah also says the man yitav loch, it should be good for you. Here it doesn't say that. Here it just says you should live long. Over there it says also, not only will you live long, you'll also have it good. So the Baal HaTorim explains, the Baal HaTorim explains that if you count the number of letters in the second commandments, is 17 letters more than the first commandments. The commandments that we have here has 620 letters. Over there is 637 letters. And he says, why? Because that's why the whole concept of reward is introduced in the second Aseret Dibros. Tov equals 17. So he says the number 17 corresponds with the concept of good that will exist in the second Luchis. But there's a very interesting thing. Why? They mention as follows.
Sorry, the first luchos and the second luchos are the same.
No, but there's different languages.
In quality, 17, or in mitzvah, 17.
No, 17 more letters in the second Ten Commandments in Veschanan than there is in the first.
In the first one.
Right. Now, he says as follows. Here. The Gemara explains why is it mentioned in the second one, not in the first ones, that it'll be good for you. He says as follows. God knew that the first tablets, Moshe Rabbeinu, is going to break. So if in the first tablets it says it will be good for you, and those broke, so Jews' hope of having anything good was completely shattered. So God said, you know what? I'm going to leave good for the second one, for the ones that are going to last. Then over there God says it's going to be good for you. So that's why it doesn't say it in the first set, but it says in the second. But the Gemara says, and very interesting thing, there's a famous story in the Gemara, but the Gemara says, L'man yarichun yomecha, that you're going to live long, does not necessarily mean in this world. It doesn't necessarily mean in this world, it means in the world to come. And the Gemara in the end of Chulin tells a story. And it's one of the reasons why, so to speak, Acher became an Epicurus. He saw the way a father told his son, go up on the tree, send away the mother bird, and bring me down the eggs. So the son did it, and on the way down, he fell off the tree and died. So Acher said, is this Torah, is this the reward? Because there's two mitzvahs in the Torah. The Torah says, if you do them, you'll live long. Kibud av v'aim, the Torah says, v'man yarichun yomecha, you'll live long. Then the Torah says, by shiluach hakam, when you send away the mother bird, the Torah also says that you should live long. Here the guy did two mitzvahs that the Torah says you're going to live long, and on the way down, the guy dies.
It's very harsh.
It's very harsh. So he said, what's going on over here? This whole thing is a baba mice. But the Gemara explains that what the Torah really means is the world is reward in the world to come. In the world and the reward in the world to come, that's where you'll live long. So it's not this world living long, it's in the world to come.
Joseph experienced in this world also, no?
What, living long?
Living less, 10 years. He lost 10 years of his life because he did not respect his...
Correct. Parents. But living long does not only mean in this world, You can have people that have unbelievable respect for the parents and yet they die young. It's not contradicting the pasuk. The Gemara explains that the Gemara says it means in the world to come you'll live long. Which is in quality, obviously, because it's above time. Okay, next mitzvah.
Because we live forever.
Yeah, so it's speaking of quality, though. Your long days, you know what it means? In the, not only over there, it's above time, you live forever. So it means in the quality of life, you get a lot of reward.
Right.
But Al Adama refers to Gan Eden. Le'elam Yeshuaretz. Okay. The next sounds very simple. Le'isirtzach. You're not allowed to kill.
Murder. You're not allowed to murder.
No, it's interesting. Here in the English.
I know.
What does it say here in the English?
Usually, our scroll is wrong. Other could be that in a new edition they corrected, but let's see. Kill. But
Tirzach, Rotzeach actually means murder, but the question, what do you call kill? We're going to see this in a second.
Same thing, no?
Well, when a court kills somebody, they don't murder them, they kill them. Killing, see, murder is always bad.
You kill him first, you did not murder him, you killed him, but he came to murder you.
In other words, murder is usually defined as something evil. Killing, right. For instance, when you don't murder a bug, you kill a bug. When courts put somebody to death, they don't murder them, they kill them. So, it depends what you're talking. Leisirtzach basically is the sin where it's forbidden to murder or to kill. But, as we'll soon discuss, exactly what does it mean? Okay, so Targum Yenison says, because in the sin of bloodshed, wars come into the world, because again, God punishes deed for deed. Now, like the Medrash says, the expression like this, you kill somebody, you can't bring it back to life. So therefore, what are you killing it for? You cannot hide yourself from God, you can hide yourself from people. So therefore, the Gemara says that even Rashi brings us down in Mishpatim, that even in the case, let's say a guy killed somebody on purpose. He murdered somebody. Intentionally, he just went ahead and murdered somebody. And nobody saw it. Yeah? So the guy thinks he can get away with it. Yeah? So the Gemara tells a story, the Gemara says it's not true. One day you'll be sitting under a ladder, and somebody is going to come and fall down on top of you and you're going to die. In fact, to me, I'm layers being on picture of, it's a very interesting story. There are two partners that went on business. They're very close friends and they made a lot of money. And one partner decided he's going to kill his partner and take away his money. So he pleads to him, "Why are you killing me? You know, what's going on?" So finally, he says, "No, I'm going to kill you." And it started pouring. So the guy says to him, the guy that's getting killed, says to his friend, "You think you're going to get away with this?" And he starts laughing at him, "Who's going to see this?" And he says to him, "The raindrops are seeing it." And he was laughing his head off, you know. And to make a long story short, he killed him. He killed him. A while later, the murderer was in a country where the king used to go incognito and hide himself, whatever, he used to go. And the king once walked by this guy, and it was pouring rain outside. And the guy reminded himself of the story that he killed his friend, and his friend said, "The raindrops are going to testify." So he started laughing. The king walks by, and the king thought that he's laughing at him. So the king says, "Why are you laughing at me?" He says, "I'm not laughing at you." So the king says, "Well, then tell me why you're laughing." So he said, I can't tell you why I'm laughing. He's going to tell him that he killed somebody. So the king said, "Listen, if you don't tell me why you're laughing, I'm assuming you're laughing because you're making fun of me. I'm going to kill you. So either you tell me or I'm going to kill you." So the guy saw he had no choice. So he said to the king, "I'll tell you the story. I once had a partner, and I wanted to steal his money, and I didn't want him to talk, and I killed him, and he told me the raindrops are going to tell the story." So he says, listen, so the king killed the guy for killing the other guy. So now he understood, so to speak, that the raindrops did testify. You know, you think nobody sees it. The birds see it, the air sees it, the rain sees it. It's always going to come out anyway. So that's what it says, that no matter what happens, it's going to, God is going to see it. Now, the Medrash says another interesting point. In the Ten Commandments, there's 5 and 5. Okay? And they say, the first of each tablet have a connection, the second of each tablet, the third of each tablet, the fourth and the fifth of each tablet. Now, the first commandment is, I am God, your God. The sixth commandment, the first one and the second stone, is don't kill. So the Medrash says, what's the connection between killing and I am God, your God? He says, when you kill a person is created in the image of God. So by killing another person, you're killing God. So you're going against the mitzvah of I am God, your God. And that's how these two things correspond one to the next. Another thing it says, what's the connection between the two commandments? We just learned honor your father and mother, and then it says don't kill. What's the connection between the two? So they say, because somebody might think, two things. Somebody might think that, oh, this guy started up with my father, I'm going to take revenge, I'm going to go kill him. So the Torah says, I know you have to honor your father and mother, but don't kill anybody because of it. Number one. Another thing it says, that if somebody is very wealthy, and they're able to support their parents, and they don't, so the Torah considers it as if you murdered them. That means the Torah says, if you're not honoring your father and mother properly, you can support them, take care of them, respect them, I'm going to consider it as if you killed them. Another thing it says, and this is the Mefarshim discuss, like we mentioned at the beginning of the Ten Commandments, Laisitza means don't murder. Yeah? It's one of the 7 Noahic laws. What is this unique concept in the Ten Commandments that God says don't kill? I mean, the guy had to keep that mitzvah. What's so special? So the Mefarshim bring down the many halachas in Torah. The Torah considers it like murder. And when the Torah says don't murder, it's the broad term of murdering, not only taking a gun and shooting somebody, it means any aspect similar to murder. And we'll see now a few examples. For instance, the Gemara says, if you publicly embarrass somebody, it's like you killed them. So when the Torah says don't kill, the Torah doesn't only mean don't kill, the Torah means don't embarrass somebody publicly, because you cause them to turn red and white, it's like the blood is gushing in and you're embarrassing them. Another thing, later on in Chumash, when the Torah speaks about rape, the Torah says, "Kashi yokum isha reel or tzochi nefesh, kein adoved azeh." When the Torah speaks about terrible things of rape, the Torah says, just like a guy kills somebody else, that's the same thing of rape. So the Torah considers that murder. For instance, one second, if you have a guest in your house, it doesn't apply today, but a guest, well, to a certain extent, yeah. In the old time, you had a guest in your house, you had to accompany the person outside of the city. That's why we learned the din of Egla Rufa. If you find a dead body outside of city, and you don't know who killed him, you measure to the closest city, the elders of the city come out, and they say, our hands did not shed this blood. So the Gemara says, what do you think, the heads of the Sanhedrin killed the guy? What does it mean? Now, a guest comes to the town, and you don't accompany them to walk with them outside the city, and let a guy go by himself, and because of that he got killed, so you're guilty of murder. That means, if you don't have somebody accompany a guest, again, today's world, they go out to the car, it's not a big, you know, but there's a concept of accompanying a guest to the car. You know, it's a form of respect. A person who causes another Jew to lose their livelihood, they can put him out of business, so to speak, is considered murder, the Gemara says. Another thing the Gemara considers murder, a person who is not a proper scholar, and he makes halachic rulings, even though he's not a proper scholar. The Gemara uses the pasuk Rabim Chalolim Hipila. He cast down many corpses. Meaning, it's also a type of murder, because you're leading people astray, you're leading people to do the wrong thing. So the Mefarshim explain, we'll see the next few things also like that. When the Torah says don't murder, it doesn't only mean what we call cold-blooded murder. It refers to any offshoot of the mitzvah of murder. What?
I should have asked you this years ago, because, you know, I've heard you talk like this a number of times, Rabbi. What did the rabbis that taught you, teach you, what is your mind on those of us who were in Europe and killed Nazis and Italians, or those of us who were in the Pacific like I was and killed the Japanese?
There's a din, if somebody comes to kill you, kill him first. When soldiers go to war, killing soldiers is not murder. Killing civilians is murder.
Wow.
A person is never guilty in war of killing a soldier. You're not considered killing a soldier. First of all, if not, they're going to kill you first. What?
And if civilians would try to kill soldiers?
No, then you have to kill them first. Right. We're talking about just going to a city of women and kids, these people do, and they just destroy them. You know, that's murder.
We did that in Europe. And we did that in...
They didn't kill innocent civilians.
We bombed those places.
But they were bombing the soldiers, and they also happened to be in the wrong place. But in wartime...
I'm sure you were going to... You will forgive our servicemen who did that.
What?
Two atom bombs, I mean, that's thrown on cities.
But again, you're doing it in war. Okay, and that was a big move and a step to stop the war. Okay? Killing soldiers is not wrong in wartime. Killing innocent civilians is wrong in wartime. So that's the difference.
A rapist, you're allowed to kill him. It's like a murderer, right? That's what he's after, you're allowed to kill him.
It's a question of law. No, it's not in all senses. Not in all.
That's the case. Somebody
I don't think you're allowed to kill him.
Somebody embarrass somebody in public, you're going to kill him too? That's also a form of murder.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think the halacha is that.
Rabbi, one more thing. And Vivi, you should listen to this. When we dropped the atomic bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, two Japanese cities, right? Mm-hmm. Okay? And then after that, and we were happy, we didn't have to invade Tokyo, or you can't, but we got drunk and with happiness. But an English professor in an English university.
Okay, but this is coming off your 9:30 time. You say after 9:30.
This is apropos, Rabbi.
Okay, make it fast, though.
Okay. Why did we do that on Japan? Why didn't we do that on Germany and Italy?
Yeah, no.
And the answer was, by this professor, we're prejudiced. Japan, they're the yellow race, and the Germans and Italians are the white race.
Okay. The next...
You got anything to say about it?
No. The next one is, after Leisirtzach, after no murder, the Torah says Leisinov. You should not commit adultery. Now, adultery is in the broad scope of it. It includes incest. It includes married women. It includes, you know, the forbidden relations that the Torah gives, especially capital punishment. Now, the Gemara says, what does the word sinof mean? Sinof is two words. Tain, af. Give anger. The Gemara says that God, adultery, when a person commits adultery, it makes God very angry, because, in fact, they say that God normally is very patient and very, you know, long-suffering, but it says he doesn't restrain his anger against adulterers, because that destroys the entire scope of humanity, of morals and ethics and all that.
Married woman.
Married woman or incest. And in fact, the Targum Yenison says over here that the mitzvah is, my nation should not be immoral. Don't let your children be involved with them. It says, Don't let your kids be involved with such type of company. Don't let your kids be involved in, you know, the stealers and the murderers and the adulterers and so on and so forth. Now, he says, why? Why is God so angry about it? Because this destroys, as we said before, the tranquility of marriage, and he gets anger between husband and wife and so on and so forth. Now, obviously, they explain it's not only adultery, because the guy are also obligated in adultery, like in the seven mitzvahs b'nei ne'ech. But it also goes, for instance, the Gemara says, like we said before, if you make a guy lose his livelihood, it's like killing him. Another Gemara says, if you make a guy interfere with his neighbor's livelihood, it's similar to defiling his wife. Meaning all of morality. So part of Leisinov is actually the whole concept of being a moral person. Not mixing into other people's business, not hurting their livelihood. Anything like that that hurts a person's personal dignity is included in the Aved of Leisinov. But basically, Sinov is Tain Af.
What if she lies? For example, if I know that you drink poison, you cannot say, I didn't know, you'll get hurt anyway.
Right.
But what if the woman, she said, no, she lied, she said, oh, I'm not married. And then the guy didn't know. So at the end, does he still get the same punishment as...
That's called an accidental sin. He has to bring a sacrifice. It's not capital punishment.
Because he didn't know.
Right. In fact, one of the reasons why Torah doesn't punish you unless if you're warned with two witnesses is to differentiate how do we know if the person did it intentionally or unintentionally. How do we know? If he wasn't warned, you don't know if you knew you're allowed to or not allowed to.
Right, but if, at the same time, if the guy knows already that he's married, I mean, married woman is a mortal sin, you can get capital punishment for it.
Yeah, but only if he does it intentionally. And he's warned right before.
So he has to be warned.
Right before.
Really?
If he's warned 10 minutes earlier, it's too late. We assume he forgot it. That's be mamish right before the act. That doesn't mean you're allowed to do it. If you're talking about, in fact, you see, nowadays it's going to sound weird, but the Gemara said, what happens if he thought it was his wife, he's going to be with, and it was his wife's sister, or he thought it was his wife, it's another, somebody else's wife. Because, you know, there's no lights, it was a whole different story. So over there, the Gemara says, if he was going to do something with somebody permissible, and it ended up by mistake, being accidental, you don't get capital punishment. And the same thing is with murder. If I wanted to shoot at a tree, and a guy runs by, God forbid, and gets killed, I didn't intend to kill him. But what happens if I intended to shoot A, I intended to kill A, and A ducked, and I killed B instead. And I shot a gun. I wanted to kill A. My kavana was to kill A. And he ducked, and I killed B instead. So there's an argument in the Tanoim, but the halacha is, you're going to get killed anyway.
Yeah.
Your intention was to kill?
But A, not B.
So one opinion says, you don't get killed because of that. One opinion in the Gemara. But other opinions in the Gemara, it's fireworks. Other opinions in the Gemara say, you intended to kill? What's the difference, you kill A or B? You wanted to kill somebody. It's not that you wanted to kill an animal and by mistake you killed a person. Then you attacker wouldn't get capital punishment. But your intention was to kill somebody, so you killed somebody else. So, you're going to get killed for that. Because your intention was to kill.
In the case of adultery is behind locked doors. So how can be warned?
Because they yichud. Yeah. Yeah. But that's the whole, you know, but if somebody did, now, in Chassidus it asks a question, let's change the thing. Somebody wanted to eat kosher meat, and by A, by mistake, ate treif of fats. Right? So he has to bring a sin offering. The question is, why does he have to bring a sin offering? He didn't mean to do it. He did accidental. He didn't do, you know, what do you want from him? He thought you're allowed to do it. He thought you're allowed to do this in Shabbos, and he did it, and then he finds out you're not allowed to do it on Shabbos. So you have to bring a sin offering. Why does he need to do tshuva if he, I understand, if a guy knows he's doing something wrong, and he does it, okay, he gets punished. But I didn't know it's wrong. I have to spend hundreds of dollars on an animal and schlep it to the Beis HaMikdash and bring a carbon. So the answer is, if the fact that a guy sins accidentally, that means God allowed that a sin came to you. Because obviously, if your intention was good, and you end up being met, God made you, allowed you to sin. You know why you have to bring a korban? Because it shows that you're connected to that sin. Because if you would have no connection to that sin whatsoever, God would never allow such a sin to come by through you. To give a very strong example, a guy's coming down a ladder. He's on the roof. He's coming down the ladder. He slips, trips, falls on his best friend. On his best friend. And he kills him. Complete accident. He has to run to the city of refuge, stay there for years until the Kohen Gadol dies. The question is, what did he do? It's his fault he tripped. It's his best friend, not, you know, somebody down deep I would love to kill him. A family member. Somebody you for sure don't want to kill. And you tripped and you fell down, completely accidental, and you killed somebody. So because of that, you have to run to exile for the rest of your life. What's the explanation? So Chassidus explains very simply. The fact that somebody died through you, who cares, accidental, not accident. Bottom line is, somebody died through you. That shows that you have a connection to murder. Because if you wouldn't have any connection to murder whatsoever, God would have never allowed such a terrible thing to happen through you. Again, this has nothing to do with war. This has nothing to do with when you're allowed to kill people. Okay? This is the fact that it happened through you shows that you're connected to it. So even if it comes like adultery or murder, granted you thought it's your wife and it ended to be somebody else, if you wouldn't have any connection to adultery, it would have never happened to you, through you. And that's why you have to do it. Now, the Mefarshim explain that this seventh commandment corresponds that you shouldn't have any other gods. Right? We said one. Now, what's the connection between adultery and not having other gods? It's very simple. It's like having other gods is like committing adultery with God. You're married to God, and all of a sudden you go into other gods. So the same thing, if a man is committing adultery, it's similar to the concept of having other gods. That's the connection between these two. Okay, the next commandment over here is Leisignif. Don't steal. Rashi quotes from the Gemara that Leisignif over here does not mean don't steal. It includes stealing, but that's not what it means. It doesn't mean don't steal. Why not? Because for stealing you don't get killed. And all of the Ten Commandments, if you desecrate them, you get killed. Murder, you get killed. Adultery, you get killed. All these things, you get killed. So when the Torah says, don't steal, it can't mean a stealing that you just return back what you give. What does it mean? It means kidnapping. Because the Torah says, if you kidnap somebody and sell him, you get killed. It's capital punishment. If I steal your car, I don't get killed. But if I kidnap somebody and sell the person as a slave, you get killed.
That's what
the brothers did to Yosef. Correct. That's why the Gemara says, Taka, that when Yosef's brothers kidnapped him, threw him into the pit, and then sold him, they were obligated to get killed. And that's where the 10 martyrs that were destroyed at the time of the Second Temple, that we read about Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av, was a punishment for the 10 Shvatim that did the sin of kidnapping and selling.
They didn't know that?
They maintained you're allowed to. They maintained you. Like we learned, he was a snitcher, you're allowed to kill him. So therefore the Medrash says, don't. Now, the Mefarshim explained clearly, it also includes regular stealing. But that's another pasuk that says, like, signevu, in Kadeshim it says, don't steal, that refers only to money. Here it's referring also to kidnapping. The commentaries ask, why does the Torah say, leisignev, when it should really say, leisigzel? And this is a very important halachic difference. There's what's called geneva, and there's what's called gezela. Both are stealing. The difference between them, like they say thievery, like they write in English, there's a big problem over here, and robbery. Geneva, ganef, is a guy who does it discreetly in the middle of the night. He breaks in quietly, nobody hears him. That's geneva. Gezela is when you broad daylight, you just go rob somebody. A thief usually does it discreetly. Robbery, you do in broad daylight. A guy robs a bank, they do it in broad daylight. Right? A thief is a guy that does it quietly. So they ask, why does the Torah over here say gneva if it should say really leisigzel? Don't do gzela. Because gzela is a more of a broader term than gneva. So they answer a few things. Number one, they say, because when you steal from somebody, you're hurting his whole family, the parents and the brothers, everybody gets hurt by it. But over there, you're hurting them discreetly. You're hurting them in hiding. It's much different.
At nighttime. But the fact that the guy went to see during the day, that means he was more of a brave thief, no?
Right.
The fact that he stole during the day.
Which one's worse?
The guy who stole during the nighttime is worse.
Why?
Because he's...
You're right, he's worse. He has to pay double.
Yeah.
And the guy that steals in broad daylight only pays single. Why? The guy that does it at night is afraid of people, but he's not afraid of God. A guy that does it broad daylight, he has a personality, he ain't afraid of nobody. He's not afraid of God, he's not afraid of people. So that's his personality. But a guy that's afraid of people, but not of God, that's worse. So the Torah said, for that you have to pay double. But again, the question over here is asked, if Leisignev is one of the seven mitzvahs b'nei noach, what does it include over here? For this, I need the Ten Commandments. And they say it's unbelievable. What people don't even think is called stealing. For instance, if you take interest on a loan, believe it or not, the Gemara says you're stealing. Even though the guy's giving you it willingly. He's paying interest willingly. Because the Torah forbids that you're stealing money. For instance, another thing the Gemara says, if somebody greets you, if somebody says Shalom Aleichem to you, and you don't answer back, the Gemara says you're stealing. The Gemara calls it you're stealing. Because you deprive your friend of a courteous response that was due him. Another thing is, if you come up with an idea, and I tell it over to people as if it's mine, you're stealing. But the Mishnah Pirkei Avos calls it Ha'emer Davar B'Shem Omrei. You have to say something in the name of the one that you heard it from. And if not, you're stealing his idea. Another type of stealing, the Torah says, here he doesn't say that, I don't know why. If you borrow something without permission, it's stealing. If I borrow something from you without permission, it's stealing. Another thing, if I steal your opinion. I'll give you an example. The people are completely unaware of this, and maybe today some people are lenient because it's common practice. If you have a store, okay, and I walk into you, you sell water. And I walk into your store and I ask, how much is this bottle of water? Giving you the impression I'm interested in buying it. But I'm really not interested in buying it. I just want to know how much it cost. I'm misleading your mind. You think I'm interested in buying it, and it's not true. So by me asking the question, I'm stealing your mind. And that's biblically forbidden.
How would you pay back for such a thing? If you have to pay back, how do you pay back? You have to pay back once or twice.
It's a very difficult thing to give back.
Well, nowadays, Rabbi, so many people go into
the
park.
The question is, no, a lot of times people, I'll give you an example. You want to go to a car dealer. You can say to him, I'm just shopping.
Right.
Or I'm just curious. If you say, I'm curious, how much is this bottle of water? Then obviously you're not giving the impression you want to buy it. You're curious. So you're asking a good question. I mean,
it's assumed nowadays that
that's... If you buy stolen goods, it's considered stealing. Because you're helping the ganav steal, because then he has, And that's why the Mefarshim explained, this is the connection to the third commandment. What does the third commandment say? Don't mention God's name in vain. If you steal, you're going to swear falsely. So you're going to mention God's name in vain. I'll give you another example. I'm surprised they don't mention it here. If you don't let somebody sleep, it's stealing, what's called Gezel Shina. You're stealing sleep. By the way, this applies in today's world. I mean, you have this is a big tumult in the courts. You know, making over CDs, making over tapes, making copies of something falls under the category of leisignif, of stealing. So, in a secular mind, a guy will say, what am I stealing? I didn't steal your, I understand if I steal your CD, you know, I go into the house and steal your CD, I'm stealing. But I'm not stealing your CD, I'm making it over. What am I stealing? I'm not stealing, what am I doing? According to Allah, if it's forbidden, it's considered stealing. If you don't let somebody sleep, it's considered stealing. You take away somebody's idea and use it as your own. It's stealing. All these things fall under the category of actually stealing. Lending money with interest, not answering, acknowledging, and agreeing from somebody else. What?
If you charge somebody too much interest, that's not stealing.
Too much interest?
Yeah. Interest? No,
you're selling
the first
interest.
Yeah.
You can't charge any interest. What do you mean, too much interest? No, charge somebody interest. Mm-hmm. If you overcharge, I know, it's also stealing.
It's also against the law, I think, no? You charge over 10%. Over 10%, I heard, is also against the law.
Unless if you're a loan shark.
Loan shark. They get you for a loan shark.
Yeah, but until they get you. But generally speaking, the world says the sin is not stealing. The sin is getting caught. Because in Torah, you can't charge more than a sixth profit. But today, where the accepted practice is 100% markup, or 50% markup, then you could charge over a sixth. Because that's normal. That's the normal way of doing business today.
It's your prerogative to ask everyone what you want. You know, people don't have to buy
it. Correct. But Geneva's das, and by the way, contrary to Jewish belief, you're not to steal from a guy either. Just a guy, you could steal. But there is a difference in halacha. For instance, if a guy makes a mistake, halachically you don't have to tell him. Let's say if a guy undercharges you. Let's see, the item said $12.99, and the guy didn't see the $12.99. He charged you $2.99 instead of $12.99. Halachically, you don't have to tell him. It's not called stealing, because he's giving it to you. What happens if a Jew makes such a mistake? You have an obligation to tell him. In other words, it's stealing from the Jew. But if you can sanctify God's name by it, yeah. But technically...
For $10.
Huh?
To sanctify Hashem's name for $10.
$10 is a great name. It depends. If, No, what happens if you, I'll give you an example. What happens if you ordered one good and they send you two by mistake? By mistake, they send you two. And you only built for one. Right? So, I'm not saying they might catch it, they might not catch it, whatever. But, halachically, if it's a guy, you don't have to give it back. If it's a Jew, you have to give it back. Because over there, you're not stealing because he gave it to you. You didn't ask him for it. He gave it to you. But to steal from a guy is biblically forbidden. Biblically forbidden. What?
With the tapes and the CDs and issues, I mean, is there any difference between music and entertainment and everything else as opposed to playing?
Whatever is legally forbidden is halachically forbidden.
Okay, so here's the question. It says here in our Chumash,
yeah,
you open up to the first page. You're not allowed to copy any form, any page, any half a page, any pasuk, or whatever it says over here.
Right.
So, we have a class here in the shul, and you know. Don't have these Chumashim. Don't have Xerox. One page. Teach the Ten Commandments.
Technically, it's forbidden. Now, there's certain laws if you're doing it for your personal use. Sometimes, you know, what happens... I'll give you an example. And this is a legal question, by the way. Forget Torah. What happens... I have this Chumash, okay? But I'm going on a trip for myself. Rather than schlepping this big, fat Chumash... I need two pages, you know, to whatever, so I'm going to copy two pages for myself. I don't know if that's legally forbidden, by the way.
Some people said it is forbidden.
It is? That's what I'm saying. It's a legal question. But again, if legally it's forbidden, then Torah says it's forbidden. If legally it's allowed...
Here it says, even for personal study group or classroom use.
If you have personal, a CD that you bought for $20... And you want another one copy in the car. So you take the one